Welcome, everybody. You're listening to Germantown Community Radio, WRLGLP at 92.9 FM. This is Vanessa's Money Hour. Welcome. It's a great day today. I am feeling really good, and I am excited about my guests. Today, we're going to be talking about the Philadelphia Public Bank initiative. Doesn't exist yet. And once again, I am in the Germantown studio. And since we are still in the pandemic, I have my guest calling in via the conference line. So just want to get a quick shout out. Jane, thanks so much. Okay. Again, Vanessa's Money Hour. Topic today is Philadelphia Public Bank. So let's start by getting an introduction from my distinguished guests. First of all, let's hear from Beth Finn. Beth, please introduce yourself to the G-Town audience and give a couple of sentences about yourself.
Sure. Hi, good morning, or I guess it's afternoon already, everyone. Thanks for having me, Vanessa. My name is Beth Finn, and I am, in my day job, I work in tech in software project management, but in my evenings and weekends, I am an activist, and I'm really passionate about the city of Philadelphia and making it better for all of the people who live here. And I love Philadelphia so much that in 2019, I ran for city council at large. And my whole platform was to bring a public bank to Philadelphia to help us pay for the things that we want to do here, like building affordable housing and fixing our schools. So that's a little bit about me.
Thank you, Beth. And Stan Shapiro, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. So I am vice chair of an activist group that organized itself about 15 years ago called Philly Neighborhood Networks. And before that, I was a lawyer on the staff of Philadelphia City Council. And before that, a lawyer with a tenants' rights organization. So I've been involved in a lot of political legislative matters for a long time. I heard about public banking 40 years ago or so as something to look into, but didn't have much resonance then. But when it began again 10 years ago, Philadelphia Neighborhood Networks really jumped into this effort with everything we had.
Fantastic. All right. Great background. Thank you so much for joining us. So let's hear about the coalition. You are both members of this coalition for public banking. Tell us about the founding of it, how long you've been doing this, and what kind of people are involved right now.
The current generation of activism around public banking started about 10 or 12 years ago with a lawyer in California, Ellen Brown, who wrote a book about the topic. This was about the time that the banking industry began to become super concentrated, and mergers created a situation where the vast bulk of the banking industry was run by a few megabanks, which meant that regular people, small businesses, others who needed credit who were not the Fortune 500, could not get credit, and this idea was an obvious solution to many of us, so there was a big conference in Philadelphia, actually, a kickoff conference to the national effort to create public banks, I attended along with other members of Neighborhood Networks, we started working on it. There was no formal coalition at that time. It's still not really a formal entity. It's individuals and people who are on the staff of organizations who came together to really build this up.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Thank you for that work. And you guys have been working a long time. I actually had just come back to Philadelphia, I believe, when that conference happened. And it was really great. It was very helpful. I learned a lot. It was kind of a new concept to me. But yeah, y'all have been doing this for a long time. So let's, for folks who want to get involved, let's give them the basics of when does the coalition meet? Is it open to anybody? Give us those kind of details. So any listeners who might want to get involved, they can follow up.
There is a sign-up link which exists, but actually at this point it's a pretty informal group. I'm going to give you my email address, and anyone who's interested can just drop me a note. So that's shapsj@comcast.net. So just drop me a note, and I will get you on the list so that you can be up to date.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right.
We also, Vanessa, we also have a website at philapublicbanking.org.
Great.
That has lots of information, too.
Yes. And in fact, for the listeners, so the Facebook, I did a Facebook posting on the G-Town Radio site, and the posting about this show today has a link to that site. It's actually pretty cool. And it has a really great little sort of cartoon that it's a little bit like the How a Bill Becomes a Law, old Schoolhouse Rock stuff that explains what a public bank is. But we have the pleasure of having Beth here, so let's jump right into it. Beth, what's a public bank?
Yeah. So I'm so glad you asked. you know, if you think about the city's $5 billion budget, we can't just store that money in, you know, under our mattress, right? We have to put it in a bank somewhere. And right now, it goes into Wall Street banks that don't really care about Philadelphia. They're not located here. And they invest. So first, they charge us to store the money there. You know, most banks charge fees. That's how they make money. And they charge us when we want to borrow against that money. And then they get the advantage of investing that money how they choose to invest it for profit that works for them. And a lot of times those big Wall Street banks are investing it in things that we don't really agree with in Philadelphia. It might be in the coal and gas and oil industry. It might be in, you know, for-profit prisons. And all of these things are things that don't really align with the values of the people of Philadelphia. If we could bring our money home and put it in a public bank here in Philadelphia, we could then use that money to invest in ourselves and loan it to ourselves at a better interest rate.
All right. So there's the basic concept, essentially keeping our money local. I like that. So before we go any further, I want to get to some specifics about the activism y'all have been doing and the milestones you've reached. But a lot of people don't know that there is one public bank. Tell us about that particular public bank and a little bit about how it operates. Stan, you want to do that one?
There are actually two public banks in the United States. One is a territory, the American territory of Samoa. American Samoa just got up and running about 2 years ago.
Right.
Before that, the Bank of North Dakota was organized in the 19th century. That's how long it's been between the creation of public banks. Hopefully, we're not going to have to wait another 100 years till the next one. Public Bank of North Dakota mostly does partnership loans with community banks to assist credit-worthy, otherwise unbankable, small businesses throughout the state of North Dakota, and has generated tremendous growth as a result. They've had the lowest unemployment, the easiest ability to balance their budgets because of the lending practices of the Bank of North Dakota. They also do direct individual student loans at very low interest rates, which is something that's not available anyplace else. So it is a tremendously popular institution in rock, red-ribbed, Republican North Dakota. It's an institution which even Republican governments crying about socialism as much as they do, will never be able to destroy. And once we get one in Philadelphia, it will also be an institution that is here forever.
There you go. Okay, great. Well, of course, we're nonpartisan here at G-Town Radio, but it's great to hear that it is essentially has support from all sides of the aisle out there in North Dakota. The other thing I think it's worth sort of raising up here, it may come around again later, but I've heard that they really – North Dakota – withstood the recession quite well, and I think there's theories that it's because they have a public bank. Did I get that right?
Yeah, if you if you look at the financial crisis of 2008, which is when all of those Wall Street banks would have failed if it weren't for bailouts by the federal government. The state that weathered those crises the best was North Dakota, and it's because their regional banks that were supporting the mortgages and home loans for people there, they had support from their public bank. So North Dakotans weathered that crisis much better than anywhere else in the country. People here in Philadelphia were really badly affected by foreclosures and other fallout from that financial crisis, and hopefully a public bank here would insulate us from something like that happening in the future.
Okay. Great. Let's talk through. So, and actually, before we get through sort of the milestones, let's talk through the milestones. But the fact is, there are several places throughout the country now that are working on a public bank. I did not know that Americans, the Samoa Territory, actually was approved. So that's pretty exciting. Give us a couple of other locations that are on the path, and particularly sort of how they're approaching it and what stage they're at in the process.
So I'll take that. Most of the action is on opposite coasts. In California, the legislature recently passed a bill authorizing municipalities to create public banks. There are a number that are now working hard on it, particularly Los Angeles and San Francisco. Right next door to us, in the state of New Jersey, the governor of New Jersey ran on a platform of creating a public bank in New Jersey, and there is a group of folks from the Public Banking Institute, which is a national support group, that is working hard with the governor to get that accomplished. They are hoping that they will get that accomplished in fairly quick order. The issues that they're facing have a lot to do with the COVID-19 crisis and what it's done to public resources and the availability of capital for this new institution, and that is a challenge, but it's being worked through, and I'm pretty confident that within the next year we're going to have a public bank on both coasts.
Wow,
and,
that's pretty exciting.
Hopefully we will be one of those on this coast.
All right. So there seem the little bit I know, there seem to be sort of some key steps involved in working your way towards having a public bank. So we're going to talk through a couple of those. It seems like, first of all, you've got to get some legislators or some elected officials on your side. So talk about where Philly is on that aspect.
So let me talk about Derek Green, who is our Councilperson Derek Green, who is our champion on public banking. He is starting his second term. Before he was elected, he was on the staff of Councilperson Marian Tasco. And before that, he was a banker himself who left banking because he saw this growth, exponential growth of the mega banks and how they lost contact with regular people in the locations that they occupied, was really immediately responsive when we talked to him about creating this bank. And the very first thing that he did when he came into office was introduce a resolution calling for a hearing on public banking, which was held very soon after he came into office. And he's been working with us ever since, and he's a great partner.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think I remember that that town hall. Feels like it's a long time ago. Emma Chappelle was there. Emma Chappelle, I remember. I think I was I was a young thing when what is it called? What is her bank called? Urban Emma Chappelle ran the the first black bank in Philadelphia. Exactly. Yeah, it was one of the first black banks in Philadelphia, or at least at that time. Yes, United Bank. And she was one of the people who testified. So, okay, great. Mm-hmm. So, check mark on getting a champion within the legislature, within city council. So, Beth, I understand one of the other big things that's needed as a step is a feasibility study. Tell us what that is and where Philly is on that process.
Sure. So Philadelphia's actually had two feasibility studies done. The first one was in 2017, and it was sort of a high-level general one where the Fells Institute over at the University of Pennsylvania did this feasibility study to really examine what kinds of things a public bank in Philadelphia could address and how it might help us here in Philadelphia, if it even made sense at all. And the results of that first feasibility study were overwhelmingly positive and said, but, you know, obviously there's more investigation and research that needs to be done. And so just this year, I think we actually started maybe the end of last year, but just this year and just a month or so ago, it was released. We did a second feasibility study that was commissioned by City Council, led by Councilmember Green. And that was done by an organization called HRNA that came in and really examined the legal and technical viability of creating a public bank here in Philadelphia and really understanding if we would need to go beyond the city to get approval from the state or something like that, and what kind of regulatory, you know, controls there would need to be. And so that study was just released. And again, it was a generally positive result, saying that we could proceed and that there's a lot of benefit that could come to the city of Philadelphia by creating a public bank here.
I think I heard you say the Philadelphia has a $5 billion budget. Did I hear that right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the amount of
money. Yes, although maybe a little bit less since the pandemic, but
approximately. There you go. Just so I want to be clear for the audience to understand what this would mean. So, The advocacy is around taking some portion, maybe not all of that budget, which is mostly, I guess, comes through tax revenue, like our taxes and corporate taxes.
Right. It's our budget comes from tax revenues. It comes from fees that, you know, people pay, things like that. It's all, and it's really all public money, right? That's money that we are paying to run our government.
And we'd love to keep
I want to add that, that there are other sources as well. There's money from other governments. There are capital funds, which are in the capital budget as opposed to the operating budget, which is where that $5 billion figure comes from.
Okay.
And then there are funds in related agencies, like the school district. There's really no reason why the school district, which has about a $4 billion budget, shouldn't itself also invest in a public bank. And the Housing Authority, there are, you know, a variety of other agencies which have additional capital. The city also has a variety of reserve funds, which it invests in short-term and some longer-term instruments to pay itself a little, tiny little bit of interest. Some of those funds could be moved over. And then, of course, there's the city pension fund, which is a $4 to $5 billion fund. And that is invested in a lot of exotic instruments, which don't, again, serve the interests of the people of the city. Some of that could, we think, also be invested in a public bank.
Wow. You may have just made all the city workers listening to the show pretty pretty nervous by saying it's invested in some exotic things because we want our pension funds protected. But we'll leave that alone.
That fund is invested in foreign currencies and derivatives and a lot of wild stuff. You know, in the name of growth, a lot of risks are taken with that fund. So a portion of it could be invested in the people of the city in things which really help us and which are safe.
Understood.
Much safer than that stuff.
Yeah, I got you. Okay, so we talked about a feasibility study, and it, essentially, Beth, let's summarize what generally a feasibility study is. It's a sort of like go, no go kind of like, should we do this or should we not? Is that, I want to summarize what a feasibility study is for folks.
So it doesn't need to be that concrete, and ours definitely wasn't. It's more of a recommendation that is made based on collecting evidence. So in this case, the evidence that they wanted to collect was how feasible would it be here based on the laws and the regulations that exist in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and the City of Philadelphia.
Okay.
So they looked at that, and they really focused on how it could affect the poverty rate in the city.
Right. Yeah, I remember that being a big piece of the summary. Okay. All right, great. Okay, so we talked about getting support from city council. We've got Derek Green on board. We talked about the feasibility study. We've gone through two already for our Philly Public Bank. And the next step, I understand, is, in fact, Stan Shapiro, my guest, is drafting the legislation. Let me ask you all to I'm hearing some background sounds, so if you have radios or TVs or anything on, if you could turn those off, that'd be great. Stan, can you talk about the legislation that you're drafting?
Go ahead. I'm sorry, would you say that again?
Yeah, so we're up to the legislation piece. Can you talk through the legislation that you're drafting and sort of what are the key components or sort of sections of the legislation that are going to be addressed?
Right. So after a lot of discussion, we decided among the options for the structure of this that it probably should be operated through an authority. Authorities are subdivisions of cities which have independent boards but have a mission that's devised by the city. So the city would charter this authority. It would, the way we've drafted it, populate the board with folks who are representative of communities that are challenged with credit needs that are not being met. So we'd have housing activists and energy conservation activists, people interested in public transportation, and a variety of things that can't now be financed. And so they would be on the board. They would have the mission of identifying the specific sectors which most need help, and then bringing in more representatives and connecting them with the small banking, the credit union, the other forces that are available to partner with, and really enlarging the availability of credit to these challenged folks.
Okay. All right. So that sounds like great. That's a good start. That sounds like the structure. So the structure would be city creates a new authority, essentially another entity, and the bank should be the bank board, the people who are the decisions makers, should be community members who are connected to and understand the banking needs of the city of Philadelphia. Okay, great.
And also people with professional expertise in banking and finance. So there'd be members of both kinds of communities on this board.
Okay, great. Let's stick with structure for a minute. I know we've got some other categories we want to cover, but sticking with the structure, you said the city's going to create a new authority. So what would be the relationship between the city? So would it be in a division of the city of Philadelphia? Or would it be independent? Tell us what an authority means. And give you a little bit more hint. I get nervous, we get nervous about the city or particular leaders who are elected having control over something, and therefore when they're gone, it sort of becomes a bouncing ball of whether it will survive. So does this authority structure that is being proposed, is that protected from essentially political bouncing ball kind of yes or no each time people change?
No. Well, not completely. It is somewhat insulated. Theoretically, as a matter of law, it could be dissolved by, you know, it's created by an ordinance, and it could be dissolved by an ordinance. But once it's up and running and is being run in an effective way, I mean, the day-to-day operations will be independent of politicians. Although there would be an ex officio member of the city's treasury department on the board, for the most part, they would make independent decisions within priorities that council might set. The history of authorities in Philadelphia is actually not bad. Once created, they wind up doing good work, and they stay around. So I'm not too concerned that that would be a problem.
Okay, that's helpful. So it sounds like an authority is essentially one way of ensuring that any authority of a city should really have the best interests of the city at hand. So that's sounds like a good start.
And insulated, hopefully insulated from the vagaries of political decision making, okay. Being able to independently chart a course which really meets the needs of people.
Got it. Okay. All right. So that's the structure question. It's an independent authority, who the leadership will be representatives of the city and banking experts. All right. What's another section of the legislation? Products and services, maybe.
So the legislation itself is not as we have it right now, and it's subject to change, but it's not rife with a lot of details about the operations of the bank. It's going to have it's going to have a board which is appointed from those groups, signed off on by a city council and the mayor as to their specific identities, and then that board is going to have to intensively get to work to figure out exactly what the lending policies of the bank are going to be, consistent with its overall mission of servicing those folks, individuals, but particularly businesses that are currently just not able to get banking, and also from time to time to help finance and refinance infrastructure. We haven't mentioned that, but that's another major function that this bank can take to enable the city to finance its capital expenses in a way which doesn't send inordinate amounts of interest and fees to Wall Street banks, but at much, much lower interest rates, and circulating that money actually back to the authority and to the city. So, those exact priorities would be worked out after the bank actually gets into operation, and are not spelled out in the bill.
Okay. Let's just run through a couple of ideas, though, because I think for everyday folks, we might be interested in that. For example, when I went to the conference, I loved the idea that Philadelphians could, go to the bank and get student loans. I mean, the student loan problem, the debt that people have taken on for student loans, for everything from, the private schools to community colleges to state and national or private universities, has become a really, really, really big burden. And so when I heard that North Dakota had a student loan program, I thought that should definitely be top of priority. So what other kinds of examples do, North Dakota, and I'm curious about the territory of Samoa, what did they prioritize as offering in terms of products and services? Do you know?
So it's pretty interesting. North Dakota, the Bank of North Dakota has been around for 100 years, and so obviously the things that were important to North Dakotans 100 years ago are different than what are important to them now. It started as a way to provide relief to farmers who were, having trouble because of natural disaster type events. And so it was meant to bring them stability for that. And over time, they've added programs that make sense in the modern day, like a student loan program. So I would imagine that the Philadelphia Public Bank would evolve in the same way. And the big advantage to having community involvement in the leadership of the bank is that those leaders, they're in tune with what is important to Philadelphians, and they can make sure that that's what the bank is focused on. You know, I think urgently right now we have needs around fixing our infrastructure, whether that's, you know, roads and potholes or school buildings, right? We all know that our school buildings are in desperate need of repair and remediation from things like asbestos. And so those kinds of projects, not only would they bring benefit to the community because our schools would be improved, but they also create great jobs for Philadelphians. And a lot of times they're union jobs that are stable and pay well and have good benefits with them. So it's really, I think, you know, those are the kinds of things that we can look at. You know, we can also look at making more green infrastructure investments. And again, those create jobs that I think is a really big benefit of the public bank.
That's helpful. That's helpful. Thank you, Beth. Would, and again, just trying to think about how it affects us. So one of the things that we sometimes see on our ballots are, you know, it's a question where they're asking the citizens of Philadelphia, should the city of Philadelphia, I think they call it floating a bond, essentially, so that we can build new infrastructure or improve our schools. And so I think that's the case then where they're working with a Wall Street firm to get debt loans.
Yeah.
And that costs us to work with that firm. But then also, you know, we've got this interest debt. So is that something that then we could replace those bonds with just using our own money from the public bank?
Right. So instead of the bond is really saying, can we borrow this money from somewhere to do these projects? And right now we borrow it from those big Wall Street banks. So instead we could borrow the money from ourselves at a much better interest rate, and invest the money here at home rather than wherever Wall Street wants to invest it.
Got it. Got it. I'm just trying to think of examples that, you know, sort of everyday folks have sort of come across like, oh.
Yeah, okay. Of course. Yeah. That's a great example.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And
great.
There are incidental benefits from those lower interest rates of, or actually necessary benefits that the city has more money to devote toward services or to lowering taxes, whatever city council decides and the mayor should be done with the savings. But those savings should be substantial. In North Dakota, the bank tends to return tens of millions of dollars to the budget of the state of North Dakota every year, to help it balance the budget and meet the priorities of the people of North Dakota. So, in a city where we always are challenged to have the resources we need to meet all of the public needs that exist, this would be a tremendous benefit, being able to reroute those interest payments we send to Wall Street into our own budget.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. That's helpful. I think we're getting a picture of this now. All right. So the legislation that you're drafting, then it sounds like it's mostly focused on this sort of the structure and the who's going to lead it. But we're leaving the detailed decisions to that board when it is established. You mentioned that going back to sort of this board, did you say that the city council would have to sign off on those folks? So again, is city council controlling who gets on that board? Who gets to decide about the board members?
Well, it would be a combination of city council and the mayor. We want this to we want to be able to have political investment by both branches of government. So the notion is that activist groups would nominate individuals with expertise and advocacy experience around some of these concerns, and they'd nominate them to the mayor and city council, and the final selections would be made from that, from those nominations, so that you'd have participation both from the public advocacy community and the political sphere, and hopefully that would generate the kind of widespread support that would be needed to really make this a successful operation.
Okay. So this is not going to be, I'm going to go there with, this is not going to be a ballot question about should we or should we not have a bank. We're doing this through the legislative process. And so this legislation, yeah, once drafted, will be forwarded on to Derek Green, who will then, as city council person, propose it. And then let's talk through the next steps. Actually, let me just make sure, are there any other sections in the legislation that we should talk through so people understand?
There are some interim priorities that are listed in this initial draft, which would I'm actually pulling up the legislation right now.
Okay, take your time. While you do that,
renewable energy enterprises, low income housing availability, co-op development, high wage enterprises, transportation projects, and then other enterprises and activities filling needs of marginalized communities. We could well and best point about this. The schools is an important one that could well be added also as a priority to fix up those schools.
Okay. All right.
But these could be all these are initial priorities. They would be subject to a process that we've not yet quite put it together, but a consultative process that we would want, again, between community voices and the political sector to, from time to time, reimagine the priorities of the bank.
Okay, I understand. We're going to take a little break here just so I can check in. For those who just joined us, you're listening to Germantown Community Radio, WRLGLP at 92.9 FM, and you're listening to Vanessa's Money Hour. Today, we are talking about an initiative to build a public bank for the city of Philadelphia. And I have two members of the Philadelphia Public Bank Coalition as my guests today, both Stan Shapiro and Beth Finn. And we've just talked through where they've come so far. They've gotten the support of Councilman Derek Green, who is really shepherding it through city council process. There have been two feasibility studies that Beth told us about. And Stan Shapiro is drafting the legislation and moving that forward. So Stan, before we move off this, what would be the next steps? Talk us now. Do the version of how a bill becomes a law with something like this. Mm. So Derek is going
right.
to do what with it?
Yeah. Well, so it's not terribly complicated, at least theoretically. At some point, you know, this is just a draft that we've been talking about, the councilperson hasn't yet had a chance to review it, so it may well go through some modifications before it's actually introduced. But when he's ready, which hopefully will be fairly soon, he will, at a council session, introduce it. It'll get a bill number. It will be referred to a committee, very likely the committee that he chairs, which is the Committee on Finance. And then at an appropriate time, a public hearing will be scheduled and will be held. And all bills in City Council must go through a public hearing. So this one will go through a public hearing where everybody who wants to can testify. Either on that date or some other date, the committee will convene to vote on the bill, and if they vote positively, it'll go to the floor of City Council. After a week's delay, they can't vote on it immediately, but after a week or two pause, they will get a chance to debate it on the floor of City Council, and if 9 members vote for it and the mayor signs it, it will become law. the mayor doesn't sign it, it'll still become law if 12 members of council override a veto. And that's the basic process.
Okay, that's helpful. How many total members of council are there?
17.
Okay, so you need 12 to override the mayor. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And Vanessa, your listeners might be interested to know there's a couple of points in that process where public engagement and public comment are really important.
Yes, tell us about
that. So, for example, yeah, so when they have that hearing in the Finance Committee that Stan mentioned, that is an opportunity for any person in Philadelphia to comment on whether they support the bill or not. Hopefully everybody supports it. And everybody gets a couple of minutes to say their piece into the official record, and it gets recorded. And so the more people supporting it, the better, and the more that our elected representatives on city council know that the people of Philadelphia want our money to be home in a public bank here. So that's one way. And then the other way is once it's getting ready to be voted on by our council members, every one of us has seven at-large city council members who represent them, and then one district council member. So it's important to reach out to your elected representatives and let them know that you support a public bank and you support the bill. And so they can make phone calls, they can contact them through their websites or email. There's lots of ways to let your council members know that you support a public bank.
Okay. That's very helpful. And it's interesting because, I mean, you know, and full disclosure, I have been, you know, a little bit part of this coalition in the past. And I think it's okay to, you know, share. Like, I love the idea of a student loan. It also, I think, is a good platform to have to get that public support. While I think people do appreciate and some do understand this whole sort of Wall Street versus local thing, you know, a lot of people are going to be like, well, what exactly is it doing for me? Because it's not, let's clarify, this is not, at least initially, going to be a bank that you walk into and have a banking account. So it's not offering checking or, you know, saving services for everyday folks. So we're looking at a different type of bank that is not, you know, sort of a retail bank. I know the other thing that's been talked about a lot is this issue of, you know, helping small businesses. I personally, though, and, you know, it's my show, so I'm allowed to talk a little bit, but I want to hear what you guys think. I think there's a really rich network of, you know, credit unions and community development financial institutions here in the city that are meeting that need. I'm not sure that we need more of the direct loans to small businesses. But some of the CDFIs, the institutions that are lending to underserved folks, folks who are, you know, sort of like Citibank, you know, sneers at them or whatever, doesn't think that they are credit worthy. Some of those CDFIs, I think, could use some supports. And I think that might be a good use of some of the ideas for what a Philadelphia public bank could do. Beth, let me go to you. If in your ideal, you know, world, what would you like the public bank to offer?
I mean, for me, it's about our public money serving the public good. And when we put our money in a public bank, we can do that. I think that the needs of Philadelphians vary vastly depending on where in the city they live. And so we need to make sure that the people who are governing this public bank represent the full breadth of people who live in Philadelphia and not just some elite few. So, you know, for me, I've talked a lot already about infrastructure and fixing our schools, and obviously those are things that are important to me. And I think there's also a lot of room to support those small businesses. And you're right, there are a lot of good credit unions and things like that. But we can provide even more support for them. A really great example currently is that, you know, the federal government has provided a lot of funding for, related to the pandemic and for small businesses, things like that. But a lot of local small businesses have had a really hard time getting access to that money because it is administered through traditional banks. And those traditional banks decide how they're going to approve who they lend the money to. And they're using their normal everyday criteria that a lot of small businesses don't meet those criteria, and so they don't qualify for this federal aid. And a public bank in Philadelphia would have a much better understanding of the businesses here, the people here, and who should get that funding, and they'd be able to better administer it than some unknown banker in, you know, New York or wherever they are. So I think that, you know, I don't think the pandemic's going anywhere. I'm hopeful that there will be more federal funding that can come to help our businesses here in Philadelphia. And so if we had a public bank, that could help us administer it and actually get it into the hands of people who need it here and not, you know, giant corporations who probably don't need it quite as much. I'd much rather see our thriving small business communities grow than, you know, giant box stores take over everything.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you.
I just want to add to that.
Stan, hold on. I want to comment before we go on. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm not trying to put you all on the spot, but I wanted to have a sort of deeper understanding of the types of things. So I thought you were going to just sort of end with that sort of like very political. Well, all is good. So thank you for getting to some specifics, Beth. That's really helpful. Stan, I'm going to ask you the same question, but go ahead and say what you wanted to add to Beth's comment.
Well, I wanted to add that second feasibility study that Beth described actually went into some detail about one particular thing that the existing financial infrastructure has not dealt with, which is race discrimination in lending. The likelihood of a denial of credit for a black-owned business and a white-owned business is much different. Both in individual cases and in the aggregate, and so there is pent up demand. We actually, councilperson and I and another member of the coalition, had a meeting with a representative of the CDFI industry in Philadelphia a couple of days ago, and they are hyped up about the possibility. Well, maybe that's too strong, but they are very interested in the possibility of a Philadelphia public bank coming into existence, which could enlarge their lending capacity, because they feel that there continue to be tremendous unmet needs.
Yep, got it. Thank you.
In the small business community.
Okay. Yeah.
Particularly the minority.
Yeah, I think through the partnership between the public bank and the CDFIs, there can be some really much deeper work, particularly on reaching even more distressed communities, even more distressed small business people, folks like that. So I think that would be good. But I want to give you an opportunity, Stan, in your wildest dreams, what would be a particular offering or a few offerings that you'd like to see the bank have?
Well, I love co-ops. So I'm actually on the public policy committee of the Philadelphia Area Cooperative Alliance, PACA for short. And co-ops are wonderful because by definition, almost they never pick up and leave for China. You know, they are controlled and run by people who live in localities for the benefit of the people who live right in those localities, and they build community wealth, which stays in the community and circulates their wealth within the communities, building even more wealth. And in some cities, you think of Madison, Wisconsin, New York, and a few others, the co-op sector is much more recognized than it is here in Philly. And banks do not understand co-ops. They're very mysterious to them. But if there were a public bank which would participate in lending along with some of the community banks, that could tremendously drive growth in that sector.
Gotcha. So not everybody knows what a co-op is, and I know there's a lot of different structures. Give us a little bit more about what a co-op is, so our audience can follow along.
It's one member, one vote. Co-ops are institutions which are either run by the customers of the business or by the workers in the business, and regardless of how much equity you bring to that enterprise, you will get one vote in the governance of that institution, which is therefore responsive completely to the owners. They're not, they cannot, you know, the employees know who runs that institution. They can't exploit customers or workers because those are the people who own the institutions. They, by their very nature, have got to work with folks on their genuine needs, not create needs that don't really exist, not to gouge people, but to serve those interests. So that's how it differs from a regular business.
Great. Thanks. And thank you for mentioning PACA, Philadelphia Area Cooperative Alliance. I am definitely a fan. And in fact, I've had their executive director on with a couple of other cooperative advocates. It's probably time to bring them back on. But what they've one of the big things they've been doing, I know, over the last couple of years is they started a program targeted to people of color. And it was like a book, you know, sort of like, let's do a book study. And it encourages them to sort of, you know, read some books about cooperatives and then see if they could start, you know, sort of developing their own cooperative businesses. And I think a few have been developed. And in fact, it's on my list of things to do to connect with the executive director again and see if I could get them on as potential interviews for the show, because I would love to profile them. Yeah, I mean, what's great about co-ops is, you know, let's all envision if Amazon had been developed as a co-op, right? All of that wealth shared much, maybe not completely equally among everybody, but certainly not. Jeff Bezos would not be essentially hoarding all those funds that he has. It would be much much better shared throughout all the people who are delivering our packages every day. So yeah, love the co-op model. Thank you for that. All right, so we will, you know, we'll listen out and we'll go to the website. Beth, why don't you give us that website again for the coalition?
Yeah, it's www.philapublicbanking.org.
Great. Check that out. So I thought we'd end with, we've got a couple more minutes, just for folks who are listening, you know, what this is about, like all the things I try to talk about, is sort of how do we individuals here in the city of Philadelphia and throughout, whoever's listening, how do we have more financially secure lives? And I am definitely a proponent of live local and buy local and local control and deep understanding of money and how it works and how to make decisions about it. Since we're talking today about sort of a public bank and what a public bank can do for the public good here in Philadelphia, let's also put our hats on and think of ourselves as, well, we're kind of our own cities of Philadelphia, right? We have this budget, money that comes into our lives each year, and we decide how we spend that. The decisions about how we spend that impact other things. So I wanted to invite my guests to sort of talk about maybe any tools that you use in your personal lives to be more impactful with your money, or any other ideas you want to share with folks, and then I'll share a couple of mine. Beth?
Sure. That's a great question, Vanessa. So, you know, I agree with you. I definitely try to spend my money with local businesses rather than big, you know, national chains. And we're really lucky that in Philadelphia, we have so many local businesses, especially during the pandemic when so many businesses are struggling. I'm trying to make sure that I am supporting the ones that that are here and that employ people here and keep their money here. So, you know, local restaurants, local, you know, stores that, you know, I try to go to them first before I order online from Amazon or, you know, or go to one of the big box stores. So I think that's definitely important. And then when there's, you know, when you do have a little bit of extra money, if you do and you want to make a donation to a charitable organization, I like to make sure that the ones that I'm supporting are also ones that work in our community and support the people here and that are using that money responsibly. You can always check out their ratings on a website like Charity Navigator and make sure that the money that they're getting in donations is being spent on the cause and not on administration.
Great. All right. Thank you for that, Stan.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm going to get back to co-ops.
Most of
our shopping is done at Weaver's Way Co-op in Mount Airy, just one of the most fabulous stores on earth, in my view, which is totally responsive to local people. And I bank at a credit union, which is also a cooperative.
There you go. Yeah, totally supportive of credit unions. Please try to do credit unions when you can. And also, I want to share a site called As You Sow. You can look it up on, just Google it. It has a tool that has, essentially, you can rate your mutual funds. Most of us who are saving money in our employer, retirement accounts, you have your mutual funds. You can go to this site and you can have your fund, see how your fund rates on fossil fuels, deforestation, gender equality, civilian firearms, prison industrial complex, military weapons, and tobacco. Fascinating, very cool, and free tool. So just an idea there. All right. I want to say a big thank you to my two guests. Thank you so much. Thank you for dealing with the technical problems we had in the beginning, and you've been great. So I look forward to staying in touch and, celebrating that public bank like a lot of people are celebrating today. You've been listening. To
Thank you so much, Vanessa. It's
You're
been a
quite
pleasure.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It was great. Mm-hmm. You've been listening to Germantown Community Radio, 92.9 FM, WRLGLP, in Northwest Philadelphia. This has been Vanessa's Money Hour. Join us every Saturday at 1 o'clock p.m. and also every Thursday at 1 o'clock p.m. Take care. ¶¶